The film crickets are intended for mature audiences. Any guests on the film crickets do not necessarily share the same opinions as the film crickets.
Film crickets chirping about movies.
It's time for the film crickets with Jay Fortier, Chris Martineau, and Melanie Howerton. On this week's episode, the crickets are joined by Jason Burns, graphic novelist and host of the What About podcast.
It's okay, you guys.
Chris, Melanie, and Jason review the 1987 American horror comedy film, The Monster Squad.
Does it stand the test of time? Let's find out. Your film crickets are on now.
All right. Welcome, friends. My name is Jay Fortier. I'm along with my good friend, Chris Martineau. How you doing, bud?
Hello, Jason. What's happening?
Yeah, doing all right. And along with my good friend, Melanie Howerton.
Hi.
How are you? Sorry about that. Just left you hanging
speak,
there. How you doing? No, it's just there, yeah. All right, so this is the Film Crickets. We talk about movies from 1980 to 1999, and we are honored to have today Jason Burns. He's a graphic novelist, also host of the What About podcast. Welcome, man.
Thank you for having me. I love that little clip that you chopped in there from Monster Squad, because I actually say that to my wife all the time. And every time she gets out of bed before me, I say, don't go Frankenstein. Don't go Frankenstein. So this movie is a big part of my life.
Oh, it's great.
I actually had that exact line in my notes on my phone.
Nice.
That's awesome. It's funny. The other day I was watching Frasier, and it was like on Prime or something. And I sometimes see certain cast members and I go, oh, like that, the person looks familiar. So I'll check out the episode. And it was a different person that I was looking up. But then a little later, I saw the actress that happened to be Phoebe. And it just happened to be this week that I looked it up. I'm like, twice in 1 week. I saw Phoebe twice.
Yeah.
Like, it's just, you know, she's not like, has been in a ton of stuff. So it's like kind of like one of those rare things.
Well, and she was like almost
exactly
a toddler.
The same, too. Like, she just, but you can tell it's her, though. It's like she looks so much like her, you know? It's really cute.
Wait, yeah, Jason, you were saying she was so small, huh?
Yeah, she was almost a toddler in this. And I was actually reading, I was looking up some fun facts, and she had actually turned down Fatal Attraction to do this movie instead, which. You know, as a genre lover, I think that was a good move. I don't know if you want to be the young girl in Fatal Attraction as opposed to Monster Squad,
Fatal Attraction. What's the difference?
Yeah,
honestly.
Exactly.
I mean, it's the same. You know, it's kind of the same movie, both for families. You know, I'm just saying.
Yeah. Having this Dracula guy go, "You little bitch!"
Yeah,
right to her face. Like, I'm like, my God.
And the thing that always threw me off, even as a kid watching this movie, because it was, you know, it was geared towards kids, PG-13, is that they show Dracula's penis in a part of the movie, which I didn't understand then, and I still don't understand now.
After
they
shoot
him through the window, when he's like half man, half bat, he is all exposed right there.
Yeah. Really?
Really?
Yeah.
Did not notice. Yeah.
I didn't see that.
And Melanie was looking.
It's very awkward for a young kid watching a movie with his parents, and then
I think that's something we need to bring up later, because I do believe I understand the reason, and I've watched some documentaries on horror movies, and the reason why this movie didn't really land the first time out of the gate, and I think that's a treatise we need to talk about later. But wait a minute, Jason. Tell me about these graphic novels. Like, what is, you're a graphic novelist, so tell me about that.
wait, real quick. We have to just remember, I have to remember, Chris calls me Jason from time to time.
Okay.
And many times you say that, it throws me for a loop. So I'm like, hey, especially today. So I'm like, sure. What? No, I don't do graphic novels.
And just to further confuse the issue, we both wore orange sweatshirts as well.
I know. Unnecessary. So Jay, I'll call you Jay, and Jason, I'll call you
Jason. Jason. You'd occasionally throw in the Jason in there. So I'm like, all right, go ahead.
I'm only Jason when my mom yells at me, or did yell at me as a kid. So, but you know, being in publishing, you have to use the full name. But so anything, I'll answer to anything. But I've been writing graphic novels and comic books for about 20 years now. I wanted to get into screenwriting, and I was writing feature scripts and met somebody who was running Viper Comics way back in the day, read one of my feature scripts, said, hey, this would make a great comic book. We turned it into a comic book, and the weekend after it was released, it got picked up by Universal and Intrepid Pictures, who made The Strangers. And from there, I've been making comics and graphic novels ever since. I ran Sesame Street Comics for a while, DreamWorks Animation Comics, their stable of characters. Currently, I work mostly in the educational space, creating hardcover graphic novels that go into libraries and classrooms to help kids learn using picture books, essentially.
Excellent.
That's amazing. That's awesome. Like a dream job.
That's really cool. I've worked from home for almost 20 years now, so when the COVID thing happened, the only thing that was different for me is that now my wife was home and everybody else. For me, it was pretty normal. So
excellent. And yeah. what's the podcast? Let me just,
it's called the What About Podcast. I host it with, Danny Nucci, who was, in a bunch of films, The Rock, Titanic, a bunch of, big movies. He was recently on The Fosters, which was a television series. We have been writing scripts together for quite a while. We would get together and talk about those scripts, but then end up talking about whatever weird subject was on our brain. So What About is basically us just talking about any topic. We release two episodes a week, every Tuesday and Thursday. Tuesday is usually a celebrity of some sort discussing a topic that they have an interest in or strong opinion on. And then the second episode is a expert that has an expert in a weird field. So we'll cover anything from acorns to death and everything in between. Yeah.
And if now, you go if it's to out- death by acorns.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Well, if you hang out under an oak tree long enough, you're bound to get tapped.
With your mouth open.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right. That's really neat. I can dig it. All right. Fantastic. Well, thank you. I was very curious about that.
Hey, you guys want to hear one other thing?
Hit it.
About a month ago, I get handed at my job an article about a guy that has a podcast one town over from me, mm-hmm. and it happens to be Jason. So I was like, holy shit. let me reach out. Like, I mean, it's like, you know, if he had a podcast about insurance, I'd be like, okay, all right, that's cool. Good for you. Congrats. You know, but I wasn't going to reach out to, like, you know, but somebody who's kind of, you know, cross genre.
In the sphere, for sure.
Yeah. So I was like, whoa. Like, so to prove I was also from one town over, I made reference to Great Woods.
Yeah. I was just going to take that joke.
You can always tell the age of somebody. They'll say Great Woods, Tweeter Center, Comcast Center. That's always the generation of the person you're talking
Holy
to.
Jesus. Yeah. I can't believe we were on the same wavelength with that. Oh, my God. So, all right, fine. All right,
go ahead, man.
That's all right. So Jason, yep. you brought us a Monster Squad.
I did.
For this podcast. And what I usually start with is, maybe we're going to go to you last, because it seems like you have, from what we were discussing before, you have a fairly deep foundation with this movie. So
I do. And then in fact, Chris, at one point I tried to acquire the rights to the movie to remake with this guy named Scott Nemes, who's a producer and executive out in LA, but they're so wrapped up in issues, which we can get into as well.
Mm-hmm. All right, cool. So so I just wanted to come to the table with your history with Monster Squad. So we usually go around and say, like, did you see it in the theater? Did you rent it a lot? Mm-hmm. Did you own a copy? Is it on high rotation? Like, what is your, where is this in your internal network? I'm going to start with Monster Squad. It's something I never watched. I only watched it the first time this weekend. I knew of it. I'm pretty sure my friend Brian, I bring up every now and then, had a pilfered copy of it. I don't think I ever had. Grandma, the video pirate, did not have a copy of this. And I never really wanted to watch it back in the day in eighth, ninth grade, because it seemed to skew too young for me. Like, I had no business. I felt I had no business watching it, mm-hmm. because the kids in it were so young and the monsters were so. And I'm going to say from this point, Universal Monsters, meaning Universal Studios Monsters. Mm-hmm. And I had no interest in Universal Monsters. I wanted to see zombies. I wanted to see gross monsters. I didn't want to see Dracula in a cape. Mm-hmm. So I just never watched it. And then as I got older and I hear more about it, and Fred Decker, who did Night of the Creeps, which I liked, surprisingly, I thought mm-hmm. it was Night of the Creeps pretty good. Mm-hmm. I know that Fred Decker did this movie as well, and he talks about it. There's something about Monster Squad in a bathroom wall.
Yeah, it's referenced, right? Yeah.
Yeah. So we knew he was going to make it. And then I found out Shane Black had something to do with this movie. I'm a big Shane Black fan from his good stuff and his bad stuff. I think he's an interesting character as a person. You can smell the cocaine on this movie. So the it's just
apparently
all
Shane Black did it, apparently.
Oh, yeah. So anyhow, I was just always curious about it. So I finally got to watch it. So that's my history with that.
Can I ask you a question now that you watched it, Chris?
Yeah, go ahead.
Did you still think now, watching it now, that it was geared younger than the, you said, 7th or 8th grade at the time that you were?
Yeah. I think it is in a weird liminal space where it is in between the places it wants to be, which is why it wasn't that successful. I think it doesn't know what to do with itself. Not that it's not entertaining. I wasn't a giant fan of the movie watching it, to be honest. It's not bad. But I'm just saying, like, I don't think it knows what to do with itself. And it skirts the line on one side or the other too much in it. And basically, it doesn't appeal to either audience, too young or too old, or too young before eighth grade and too old after eighth grade. I don't think it appeals to either and both. So
okay,
that's why it kind of is.
Go.
All right, Melanie, go.
Okay, so with me and my mom, we always watch movies together. I probably watched this first on HBO because I know it was shown on HBO a ton of times. Probably rented it. I don't know, but I've seen it forever. I own the DVD. As soon as it came out, my mother bought it for me. Yeah, I got it. I didn't have to rent it. I know a lot of history about it. I also watched the documentary Wolfman's Got Nards. That has a lot of good information in there, and the actors and the story. And honestly, I think it didn't do good because of marketing. Because I saw the stupid flyers that they had out for it on this documentary, and it was basically, it looked like a Western flyer of the monsters. It just had like a monster like Dracula wanted for this and this. It just looked, the marketing was absolutely horrible. It actually came out, I think, like 2 weeks after The Lost Boys. And
I'm sorry to interrupt you, because if I tell friends that I like this movie now, like people of our generation, they'll say, wasn't that a Corey movie, a Corey Haim and Corey Feldman movie? It's
funny.
Instantly connected to that.
Yeah. Hmm. So, yeah. And you're like, no. And I actually, it's so funny because when he said that we were going to do Monster Squad, I didn't know it was because you picked it, because I've been asking Jay to do this forever. So I thought it was just because I picked it. And then I actually made them watch Night of the Creeps too. So, so we did like a creature double feature. We did Night of the Comet, Night of the Creeps. Chris didn't like Night of the Comet too much. And it wasn't as good as Night of the Creeps. Night of the Creeps, no. I've always loved. And I own that on DVD as well. So I absolutely love it, and I've always watched this movie, and like I said, I enjoy it just as much today as I did when I was younger, and in fact my kids like it, and I've got them to watch it, and they still like it. So I don't know, I think it takes either a certain kind of person or a certain kind of mood or whatever, but I just think it's adorable, and I love what they were trying to do. And he also said if you took it too seriously, you're not watching it right.
Sure.
So, you know, like, but I'll just go into all the stuff later on, but that's my history with it.
Okay.
Jay or right. whoever.
Yeah, I saw it in the theater, and then watched it many times over the years. I own it somewhere, but I have a kid that likes to play
Get
games with
it.
My stuff. Yeah. So I had to rent it.
Right.
So I couldn't find it. It could be broken too. I don't know. But I loved it, owned it. I've seen the documentary that's on the DVD. I love that. And I hope, you know, any trivia I bring up from remembering that, like, you know, I don't want to steal any of Melanie's thunder because she does the trivia at the end. But I do like the idea, if this takes one thing away, I apologize. But I like the fact that the kid who played Rudy is kind of like a dork, like in real life. Like you know, as far as the way he is. And he says, yeah, I'm really cool on camera. I'm all this. I'm all that. They yell cut. I'm making the girl mixtapes. like the girl that he's interested in. So, as far as also the fact of, you know, to go along with the question of, you know, I mean, I see what everybody's saying about, and of course we'll get deeper into it, but like there's like this, it's almost like super adult with everybody swearing at each other. And adult themes, but there's also, they're very like tiny. So that's kind of a weird mix, but I love it. I still do love it over, you know, this many years later, I think it's fun. And, you know, that little girl is adorable.
I love her.
And so is that little boy too. he's not as prominent.
I was
but
a fan
he's
of the Beagle.
When I saw the Mummy.
Yeah.
A good Beagle.
Yeah.
Huh?
What a good Beagle.
Oh, so yeah. Cute.
I had a Beagle. Yeah. He wasn't that good. Hmm. He didn't listen that well.
I have a Beagle now, and we're surely going to hear him howl at some point during this, so I apologize in advance.
That's
so.
What they do.
All right.
Yep.
All right, Jason, what's your deal? What's your deal? Tell me.
So, like Melanie, I didn't see it in the theater, but it was definitely HBO for me. I was a latchkey kid. I watched a lot of HBO, so I'm sure this was in the rotation of, you know, Red Dawn and The Dark Crystal, somewhere in between there every day on HBO. In my mind, I always wanted to be Rudy, but I was definitely Horace. But I just loved everything monsters, everything Halloween still do. Soon as, you know, the spirit of Halloween opens up on August 15-ish is usually when they open up. I'm inside. Yep. I eat up all this stuff, did as a kid as well. Still watch it probably annually to this day. Still love it. And I think if I was coming at it for the first time, I don't know if I'd like it as much as I do, but it just makes me feel like a kid again, which I love. Yeah. I love being able to disconnect from adulthood every now and then. And I don't know. It just, I love the idea that there's mixed messaging in the themes in 80s movies where they were, you know, marketed towards somebody, and then you go and it's always really confusing of what's happening in the movie because you're like, wait, this is PG-13 because none of that stuff flies anymore. So
yeah,
it just, it's a feel good movie for me. And I, in fact, I used to work at, and Jay will get this, Massive Video in North Attleboro, and I used to put it on all the time. So
yeah.
Wow. I was always promoting it.
Well, actually, you know what?
Jason's
we are all
working
from,
again. Yeah. We got to watch friggin'
I worked at the Attleboro Mall.
Oh, yeah, nice.
Oh, yeah. We are all, I'm the only one still in New England from this show, but we're all originally from either Rhode Island or Mass.
Nice.
Where'd you work at Emerald Square?
I worked at the pet store forever, and I was like the manager of all the fish.
Oh my God.
And
right.
Then I worked at Accessory Lady and I was the key manager in there.
Oh, Jesus.
I'm trying to think. I worked at three. Oh, I also worked at Abercrombie. Blah. Can't say it.
That's all right.
But yeah, I think there was somewhere else I worked.
Mall life, man. Hashtag mall life.
I worked at Sears, and then I would get my check on a Thursday. Did you really?
I worked in the
computer department at Sears.
Oh, I was 15, 16, and I stocked the shelves in the mornings, get my check, and I'd go buy CDs at Leachmere. Best place to buy CDs.
Hey, were you guys there when Richard Simmons came in there? Because I was.
I think I was.
And I was also there when, what's that guy's name? That big, tall guy from that beach. He was a lifeguard.
Hasselhoff?
Yes.
I was there for the Hasselhoff concert.
I was freaking there for that because I worked there at that time. I'd never seen anybody so tall. Oh, my God. And then I remember Richard Simmons walking around going, come on, everybody, with all like the old, you know, walkers in the morning and stuff.
Oh, God.
I don't mean to move too far away from the movie, but I actually, a friend and I went to Emerald Square Mall this holiday season just to see what it was like.
Yeah.
It's scary.
It is scary there. I feel so bad for the people who still work. Nothing is open. There's a couple stores here and there. Like even the stores that you would imagine not to leave are gone now. And
You know the beginning of Mannequin? When they're walking around and she goes, we are open.
Oh, yes. Yeah. That's so sad. Yeah.
That's what it feels like.
That's too bad.
I hate
that. So look. All right. Monster Squad. So wait a minute. This has the weirdest MacGuffin ever. The weirdest Chekhov's gun possible. What is this amulet thing? Like, is this just to make? Does anybody care about the amulet? I did not care about the weird amulet thing. Was that just to get things going?
It needed to be there, but I didn't care about it.
Yeah, I showed up for the monsters and the kid swearing kids, and the amulet was just an SOS for the sake of the story.
Unbelievable. Yeah. We have Van Helsing at the beginning. By the way, I don't know if you guys know this, but I did like how they had the opening crawl at the end that said they blew it.
They blew it.
That's funny. I was into that. But again, not to get to the end, but we see there is some time travel in this situation where Van Helsing defeats Dracula in the past and he comes back through a wormhole and shit. But Did you know that they give people thumbs up in Transylvania in the 17th century? Are you aware of that? You're right that this was a thing? I'm like, what is happening? But it's a kid's movie, so it's fine. Like, what do you expect? Like, what do you want out of it?
I mean, hey, how many children can write a crayon letter to the army and have them show up?
So, like, anyone's going to come, and where did he even send that to? What's the address he used for that?
Dear Army guys.
Dear Army guys.
Yeah.
So I want to, if I can, open it up to the fact of why I think this movie is not for the people that it's that they think it's made for. So this movie, I think, skews young. They're trying to get it to skew young. And we know this from the beginning when the two kids that are drawing horror pictures in their school, they get brought in front of the principal's office and they're explaining themselves as to that they're not crazy. They're just like monsters. Mm-hmm. Just because you like monsters doesn't mean you have a problem. You know what I mean? I used to put pictures of Fangoria like zombies up in my locker. Like, doesn't mean I'm a psychopath. I just like monsters. It doesn't mean I'm crazy. And when the principal is explained to them, like, I used to think monsters was cool, but then I found out that science was cool. And he goes like, like that. He does that. Science was cool. And to me,
dig it, man.
Yeah, dig it. So to me, that is an adult from the Disney Channel. When you watch any of those shows from the Disney Channel, all the adults are stupid and all the kids solve their own problems without having to talk to adults. And to me, the adult trying to show that they're cool by doing the thumbs up, but they're doing it like they're not cool. Like science, hey man, science isn't cool is what they're saying. Now, I'm skewed here because I'm a science teacher, but I get what they're going for because science isn't cool sometimes. I get it. But the fact of the matter is like they're going like, hey man, school is cool. Ah, like that. That is for
like an
after school
special.
Yeah, seriously. That's for young kids. Whereas if this movie was skewed for high school kids, the person doing this, they would be framed as either teachers in movies for older students, older people are either assholes or there's somebody you can relate to, not the guy that's trying to make sure you stay in school.
Yeah.
Like, so right out of the gate, they're skewing it to like Disney Channel sixth grade and under, where parents or adults are stupid and children can solve their own problems. Am I out of bounds on that, or anybody want to expound on that?
No, I think that's interesting. I think you're right. It's funny. I never thought about that until you had just mentioned it. I always saw it as like Stand By Me with monsters. To me, it was more like the relationships of the friends. And I guess I never even sort of absorbed the adults in the thing. But you're right. If that teacher would have been the principal from Breakfast Club if it was skewed for older folks. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Jason,
well, also, I'm sorry. When you said adults are dumb, I wrote down like when the mom was like, is that the really tall one? No, mom, that's Godzilla. Oh, okay. Like, okay, I'm sorry, but who the hell doesn't know who Godzilla is and who doesn't know who Dracula is? I mean, when did these things come out? 1931? I mean, you know, for Dracula, you know, and like she doesn't know the difference between Godzilla, a huge lizard that she grew up watching probably on Sunday afternoons when there was nothing else on TV, and who Dracula is. Give me a break.
and if we can too, and good for them for doing this, but mom is traditional mom, has an apron on with a dress and shoes and little heels in the house, 50s. 50s mom. So straight out of Universal Monsters, 50s mom. And dad is, all I do is work and all I care about is work. And even though he does redeem himself a little bit later and he does have more of a heart than we think. But like that to them is what parents are. Dad works all the time and all he cares about is work. And mom just cooks all the food and says stupid stuff about Godzilla. I think, Jason, I want to piggyback on what you said, is that this movie is the bridge, now that you said it, it's the bridge between Goonies and Stand By Me.
Yeah. Yeah.
Goonies is the lesser version of this. It's still the same vibes, but less cursing.
Mm-hmm.
And Stand By Me is the absolute other end of this, where the kids are like basically getting involved in murder and not murder themselves, but going to see dead bodies and running away and smoking much more than that. So I think it's an interesting bridge. What makes Goonies so, I think, more popular is that it skews older, and when the kids curse, it's more of a novelty. Where in this movie, Holy Jesus. Oh my God. Like, nobody says the F-bomb, but I've never heard, well, you know, we heard the little girl say chicken shit, which is right. funny. Mm-hmm. There's no doubt it's not funny. Did they call somebody an asshole in this?
Yeah. I'm pretty sure they used the word asshole.
Well, they but definitely, it's one of the kids were supposed like, to be. There was at least 10 gay slurs.
Yeah, at least. At least.
Right. I mean, a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that would not stand up right there.
And not only that, but computing, making a correlation between gay slur and a monster, which is right. like, would you rather me be a monster or mm-hmm. It's like, oh boy, yowza.
Yeah, I do wonder.
Line, and I know Jay's going to think of this line too. And remember, Jay, I know what you're, if they blew him up and put his head in a blender and mailed the rest of the pieces to Norway, he would still come back from the grave. He goes, that was part seven.
Like, I love that. And Jason, we won't forget you. I know Jason wanted to say something. Before you're, you know, while you're already mentioning that,
yeah.
I was such a slasher fan and still am
yes.
that the fact that they say that, I laughed then and,
yeah.
and hold on tightly to that section mm-hmm. right there, because it's like, and the best part is, I'm like that kid because I don't care.
Me too.
If they bring sure. him back the yeah. next yeah. movie.
Me too.
It's like, I know they killed him. I know he had a gigantic sword like through his, through the bottom yeah. of his chin going out the top of his head. But a lightning bolt hits him in the next movie. Yeah. We're back. It's okay. Yeah. You know, because that's we just awesome. Want it again. We want to feel that
yeah.
again.
Yeah. Mm.
So I
our
get what that kid is saying.
I'll keep watching every also, single one of them. I don't care what happens.
And I also love the father that he's in on it sort of with him. He comes yeah. back from the grave. Like he actually gets excited for a second, mm. but then yeah. puts on the real hat and goes, oh, well, they, you know, he always comes back from the grave.
Yeah.
But I love that. So, but Jason, you were about to say something?
I was just going to, like, from a Hollywood standpoint, usually things get piggybacked on the success of something else. So you look at something like Stand By Me or Goonies, and you wonder with a movie like this, what elements got put into it because an executive said, well, that really worked in that last movie that we had with right. the group of kids. So let's get that in there.
Mm-hmm. But to me, it's interesting in that the choices that they made to make the kids in the Monster Squad, again, getting into a slight, let's get into child psychology a little bit here. Mm-hmm. Not that I know a lot about it, but first of all, we have a straight up clubhouse with a sign that says no girls allowed. Like they were already in the eighth grade and now you jacked them down to the fifth grade by putting mm-hmm. no girls allowed. Now, I'm sure that's yeah. because of his sister.
Mm-hmm.
And she has to be there anyway. Again, how young are these kids? Mom says you have to play with me. Holy Jesus. Like that's for a five. She's six. Is she six? She's in kindergarten.
Yeah.
Oh, by the way, don't worry. She's a virgin. That's later in the movie. So,
yeah.
Holy shit.
Hey, at least
I thought it was weird that Rudy wanted to hang out with a bunch of young kids. Like, yeah. mm-hmm. I think that's so weird. And I noticed that even when I was little. I'm like, why would he want to hang around? I mean, especially like the little, like they won't let the little girl in, but like the kid that says, mommy came in my room. How old is that kid? He can barely
that kid's
talk.
Little. Yeah.
See,
you know what I
that's
mean?
How,
like,
I go back to Stand By Me. I pictured Rudy is sort of like the River Phoenix character, where he has a rough upbringing and is kind of exiled himself from friends, so he has to hang around with the younger kids.
No, they were kind of closer in the same age there. They weren't years apart.
When I was looking at it, I think he's a good person. Like, even if he's looked at as whatever.
Oh, yeah.
So he sees an injustice and tries to help out Horace. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, as a result, is kind of like, whatever, I guess you want me to hang out. You know, like, wasn't planning on it.
Mm.
Saw the sister changing in the other room.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And said, I'm in the club.
I can hang out.
Yeah. So, like, it was kind of like a double-sided, like, sort of like, I'll hang out with you for a bit, man. You're a cool little guy.
Yeah.
Oh, this is my club here. Like, happens to look into that girl's room. So it's just kind of, I don't know, it was funny.
But I mean, how cool is he? Did his bike have a banana seat?
It did.
It sure looked like it. Looked like it had a banana seat.
I haven't seen those in so long. I never even thought of that.
It did have a banana seat. So how cool can you be in a leather jacket with a banana seat sparking up a Marlboro on school grounds?
But he was like Fonzie, right, man. He right, lit it with his shoe.
Yeah. He's,
oh, yeah. Jesus.
See, I don't think he was Fonzie. He was Corey Feldman, and that's why people, like, he was Corey Feldman from Dream a Little Dream. That's what they made him.
Okay. Oh, God.
Yeah, you're right.
But again, he's in a clubhouse. They have a tree fort. They have a tree fort. And in that tree fort are their monster posters. And in what's the lead character's name? The guy. What's the lead character's name?
Oh my God,
Sean.
The boy in charge, Sean.
Yeah.
Sean. The one who had a heart attack later on in life. Mm-hmm. Who I thought had died, but apparently I had a Mandela effect moment. I thought he had passed. He has not passed.
No,
but
Horace
anyway.
Actually passed away.
Horace passed. Okay.
And I'm going to say something about that. No, I feel so bad for him because he died of pneumonia, but the thing is, in 97, he died all the as far back, he was only in his 20s. He died in 97. So he had pneumonia. Hospital let him out way too soon, and they sent him home sick. And then when he couldn't breathe and he went back to the hospital, they gave him the wrong medication for asthma or something and literally killed him.
Oh.
So it was basically medical malpractice, pretty much.
Yeah.
But what I feel bad about is that he was so young. And when these characters were making this movie meant so much to them and the director. Like, everybody, it really meant a lot to them. And then because it bombed so bad, they didn't even want to almost be associated with it at one point. And when it started getting, like, really big again and they started noticing 20 years later that people, like, really loved this movie, he never got to see that at all. So,
the Renaissance.
Yeah.
And then the Renaissance to Monster Squad.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
When the cast was talking about it, and I have his name, it's Brent, I'll probably say his last name wrong, but Brent Shalom. When the cast members started talking about how he was not there to go on all the tours and all the things that they were doing and actually see that this movie became so big, and actually one of the most beloved characters in this movie was Horace, and a lot of lines come from him and stuff like that people love, they were crying. Like, Rudy was actually, he started crying because when he was talking about it, because he felt so bad that he couldn't be there with all of them to celebrate this and to actually see what was happening. So, and that's sad though, he was so young.
Let me dovetail back, and that's a terrible story. So again, like, these people don't get to see the profits of their efforts. But so if I can get back to the child psychology of who this is made for, you have a clubhouse of children that have monster posters. Their lives revolve around monster movies. When things start to go south, they immediately assume it's monsters. Like, this is our time. Like, we've been waiting for this since forever. Right. So it's like the kids that think they can solve world problems just by, like, mentioning something. Like, they think, well, we know what to do because we've watched all these monster movies.
Like the Lost Boys. I remember you saying that when we did the podcast of the Lost Boys, because they looked at all those comic strip books all the time. And then you were like, and automatically they were like, we know what's going on. It's, you know what I mean? Like immediately.
No, you don't. Like, that's all not real. And now the real has come to us.
Well, the same thing applies to Stranger Things today. I mean, so much of... I watch Stranger Things now, and I think, wow, there's so much Monster Squad in here, whether they realize it or not.
Yeah. Well, I've heard Stranger Things likes to kick it back to the 80s. Is that true?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they do. Right.
Like, it's dripping in it. And that's fine. That's the whole vibe of it anyway. So
can't I really see it, but that's Eddie Munson.
Nice.
Cool.
My wife got me a shirt, but the thing was too small.
Oh, so no.
I was like, I can't wear this.
I can see it.
look like I'm trying to be at Muscle Beach, but I don't have muscles.
But the kids finally say, well, we as kids, we know what to do. So we're going to go take care of this problem. But to me, where it goes south is let's sharpen the stakes. Let's get all the weapons ready. We are going to go murder some monsters.
Yeah, and before
maybe
you do that,
super bullets in class.
Need a good montage.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, in shot class, how many bullet molds do you find in shot? And where did he get silver? Like, silver is
not, like,
he's
a giant.
Oh, I forgot.
He opened it up and
he's
like, what?
But it's like, wait a minute. Like, let's go murder some monsters. Like, whoa, easy. They'll leave that for the Frog Brothers.
Yeah, the real life version of this is that they would have just killed Scary German Guy and he would have just been a neighbor that thing.
Accidental.
Oops. And that was sad too when they were like, "You seem to know a lot about monsters," and he's like, "Matter of fact, I do." And then he
yes.
closed
the door and got that tattoo there. Well, that was the deep moment, like, wow, out of nowhere.
And mm-hmm. you know,
a Holocaust reference that is actually like done well.
Yeah.
You get the gravity of the situation.
Yeah.
Not when you're a young teenager in the theater, though.
Right.
No.
You know, right over my head.
Well, maybe it doesn't go over a head, but you know about the Holocaust, but you haven't learned enough about it.
No, but I didn't know that tat meant that.
Oh. Maybe not. 50-50, but as you get older, you realize, and that's really saying something at that moment, right? You think you know monsters. I know monsters. Mm-hmm. That's just Dracula.
Who does not love... deal. You know, because I just saw him for the first time, and then the transition comes, "Okay, boys, time is almost up."
This is
your last chance for pie. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I just love that. I mean, how do you not? That just warms you right up.
Yeah. He's so cute.
Well, he's just a lonely old man that just
Saying, like, you went from being afraid of him because you're following through the eyes of Sean and his friends. So you're like, okay, we should be afraid of this guy. And then the first thing they show is a guy, him with a knife, and then it transitions to offering them stuff. And I just love it.
So we've established how, again, we're looking through the eyes of young children. And establishing the vibe and the aesthetic of the Monster Squad. I mean, so much so they renamed themselves. We were the Monster Club. Now that we're going to go murder monsters, we need to be called the Monster Squad.
Murder. I just love
that. They're murdering monsters.
It's
right?
funny.
It is funny. It's skewing, and the fact that we're seeing the old German man in the spooky house the same way the Macaulay Culkin sees the salt man in Home Alone, where through the eyes of a child and the things that they think are scary, right?
Right.
And what they think is important. So then I counter all of that with, A, the language is, like, not bad. It's not, I've heard a lot worse, but the fact of the matter is the cursing is way beyond, somewhere between Goonies and Stand By Me. That's the first thing. Second of all, when and it's a spit take scene and it's funny, but then you realize what they said when they go up to stop the ambulance, the MacGuffin, they have to do the German incantation, but it has to be said by a virgin. Is it specifically a virgin woman?
Just virgin? All of them were, and that's I thought of the same thing, Chris.
Oh, did they not mention a female?
I'm asking. I don't remember.
No, they didn't.
Any boy in there could have said it.
That's true. Right. Yeah, they could all said it. Right.
All right. So anyway.
I don't think it did. I think it's their said version.
So that we have these 6th and 7th graders going to Rudy, who's an 8th grader, is going, "Hey, do you know any virgins?" And he does a spit take. Now, that's funny because it's such a quick cutaway scene. It's literally 5 seconds.
Yeah.
Because you're not expecting them to say it, which makes it funny. But what a question. Holy shit, what a question to ask someone. And he's thinking, now again, let's cut to him going once he does his spit take, a Rolodex in his head of, let's say, who do I know? What is happening?
Yeah, 8th grade, that shouldn't happen, right?
Like, what is happening here? So it's skewing older, even though they're not making it that. The other bit here is, we do have a final confrontation. We find the virgin to say the incantation to, again, the BS MacGuffin of the movie is the amulet keeps the monsters at bay, but once every 100 years it can be destroyed. Why? Reasons. I don't care. I'm not making fun of the movie. I don't care about that. Like, whatever. It's supposed to be fun. I don't give a shit. So I'm not making fun of that part. But they have to do the incantation, and they ask the girl they find that they think is a, quote, virgin, to say these German words as the older German man is saying it, how to pronounce them. So she's saying them. It doesn't work. And what does she say when it doesn't work? The boy next to her say? Are you sure you're a virgin? And what does she say?
She said, "Well, Steve, but he doesn't count."
Okay.
And then they go, "Doesn't count."
Mean? There's a lot of, and I'm not going to go through any of it, but there is a lot of interpretations of Steve doesn't count There's a lot of interpretations of that that you can go into that I'm not going to express through my lips.
Of course, yeah.
But again, the age group. And then we immediately, and again, it's weird because I'm like, why did I just laugh at that?
It's
the
fine.
Boy turns to the 6-year-old girl and goes, wait a minute. Is she a virgin? And she's 6. Now that's a funny line, but oh my God. Now I'm not in saying anything. Why would you say that?
I'm going to make you feel a tiny bit better.
Holy Jesus.
I'm going to make you feel a tiny bit better.
Yeah.
Once they asked if she was, the old man didn't go, are you?
Yeah, true.
To the little girl.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes.
Like, you know, well, let's check. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, they instantly knew. That is great. By the way, side reference, there is a future Simpsons episode where Lisa is an adult about to get married. And she goes, Mom, I feel really guilty about wearing white. You know.
Oh, my gosh.
She goes, Milhouse. And he goes, oh, honey, Milhouse doesn't count.
That's funny.
The mother saying that. I just love that.
So Jason, let me ask you from a screenwriting perspective. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying the joke flops, but is it me? I can't even put my finger on, is it awkward? Is it funny? Is it done well? Can you do it a different way? I don't know that you can, but boy, is it.
You certainly can't do it today. The tone of this movie would not exist today in its current form. If it was remade today, it would be like, it would be done as a definitely an older group of kids in a more serious way. Or, you know, like they did with the first season of Stranger Things, it would just be they'd go all in on the seriousness of it. But yeah, you know, what's funny. It's like, so this came out in 86, I think it was 87,
86, 87. Yeah.
Yeah. So I was about 9 or 10. And to me, it was like, I remember thinking, wow, this is unlike anything I've seen before. Probably because of that reason that it skated in two different worlds. Mm-hmm. And it would be interesting to I'm sure if I was in high school, it would have had no appeal to me whatsoever. Because like you said, by that point, I was into Freddy Krueger and Jason. Mm-hmm. And so the idea of these old timey monsters would have went right over my head.
So, yeah, that's the weird part about the movie. And you were saying, Jason, is that it kind of it does skirt the two. The scene before Dracula gets stabbed through the chest with an iron gate. But it has these touching moments of Frankenstein don't go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which I thought the Frankenstein stuff was great. As a kid, I remember thinking, yeah, they turned one of the monsters into a good guy. Like, that was just a cool vibe. Meanwhile, I thought the Creature from the Black Lagoon was the baddest ass monster of all. And he took him down with one shot of a shotgun, which was devastating as a monster lover. But yeah, it skirted so many different genres, so many different age demographics. You're right. It didn't know what it was, but to 10-year-old me, I didn't care then.
So the vibes you were, so let me just hone in on this. The vibes you were digging, what were the vibes that you were digging? And I'm not saying that in an inquisitory fashion. Yeah. Like, what were you thinking? I want to know, like, what were you digging on then?
So I'm sure it was the monsters that first brought me in. And the idea
the monsters
of
bring all the Jesus to the yard.
Well, and they had the great theme song, which I'm sure we're going to bring up at some point, which was very much like Ghostbusters. It had the little rap in it and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. They were trying to be mainstream with this movie, and it certainly didn't hit that. To me, it felt like a bad B movie that had some great acting. I thought the girl, when she's doing the German bits at the end, was so like movie because she was like terrified and it had that vibe. And I thought the German guy was great as well. I don't know. I just, there was so much about it that I liked as a kid. And that, as I go back to watch it now, and I mentioned this earlier, but it just touches the nostalgia vibes. And I do think that, I think it was Stan Winston that did the monsters. They hold up to anything that you do today with CGI. They still look fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Yeah, they did.
I wonder if they were going for any point, again, thinking about Shane Black, the screenwriter, who's done 1,000 things. Don't forget, directed Iron Man 3, probably one of the better Marvel movies ever, just in terms of tone, in my opinion. Everybody discounts Iron Man 3, but it's actually really good. But I wonder how much he's satirizing the old monsters, but making them do something serious. You know what I mean?
First, I want to answer that question that you asked. Jason. And then I want to say something. Well, you asked Jason about what you liked about it.
Yeah.
Well, when I was growing up, and my mom still has these books, they are so old, but she's got these humongous coffee table books that she's had since literally the 70s. And I grew up when I was really little, like literally looking at all these books, and they're all the old Universal type monsters. So I always grew up with that. And then I always grew up with Abbott and Costello meets Frankenstein, the Wolfman, Dracula, all that. And I actually own those on DVD. And I brought my kids up on those too. So when I had already seen all that, so when this movie came out, I was already well aware of all those things. And so, of course, I wanted to see it for the monsters, but I always looked at it from day one as it was a comedy. And this never scared me in any way. Okay. In any way possible. But I always thought it was a comedy, and I liked looking at it because of the monsters and stuff that was in it. And I've always liked special effects, even when I was little. So I guess I still feel the same exact way, because it brings me back to looking at my mom's monster books and, you know, looking at the DVDs that I have that I grew up with. That I watched the Universal Monsters with Abbott and Costello. I still watch those all the time. Like I said, I own them and brought my kids up watching it. So I don't know. I love all of that. I always have. I always love special effects. They did a good job. And then the fact that it's a comedy, every little thing that almost everybody says in here is has comedy in it. Mm-hmm. And I think I've always kind of noticed that even when I was little. So that's why I liked it. I still do.
I remember years later seeing, and I think it came out like early 90s, Arachnophobia, which has a lot of the same vibes. And they marketed that movie as the first thrillomedy. And to me, like, this was in that same realm. It was comedy in a horror landscape.
Yeah.
I just wonder, like, in terms of if they were thinking in terms of the satire, and I mean satirizing the monsters themselves, like, the monsters were so successful back in the day because basically, someone saw a monster, screamed, and ran away. Like, when you saw a Gillman, you passed out, and Gillman took you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
When you saw the Wolfman, you screamed and ran away. Now we're putting these things in a situation where someone's going to actually actively do something about it to varying degrees of success.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So what happens when you take these things, and now the monsters are a threat? Granted, Gillman wasn't much of a threat, and the Wolfman was kind of a reluctant monster anyway. And how many vibes did you get from Dracula as the final boss in a video game? Like, the other guys are tough, but now we got to get through Dracula. He can push people out of the way and whatnot. He's the final boss, right? So I'm wondering if that's what they were going. Now, I'm not saying it was a successful venture, but what I am saying is I'm wondering how much of that got put into the movie. Because, again, back in the day, those movies weren't scary. They were just supposed to be kid-friendly horror. So we still have kid-friendly horror. But now we're putting it in a modern setting. So now what would the Universal Monsters do? I don't know. Just riffing bits here. Who knows?
I think it was a homage as far as like the people who made the movie, like, grew up loving all these Universal Monsters. And I mean, even when we were looking at like Night of the Creeps, there's so many references to different movies in there that they grew up with. And the same with this, you know, just even the same phrase, like, you know, 2,000-year-old. You know, dead guys or whatever, don't just get up and walk away. And then Night of the Creeps, it was like dead guys, don't just get up and walk away. But with all the posters in the background, everything, it was pretty much like almost like if all of us grew up loving all these movies like forever, and then we're like, okay, let's make a movie and put all of our favorite things into here and kind of make it work somehow. I think it was just kind of a homage to what these guys, you know, grew up with and what they loved, and they wanted to make a movie with all these original type of things in there. And then there's a lot of little like Easter eggs in this movie too, from old movies. So I think it was just something that they wanted to do really bad, just because, you know, they grew up with it.
Yeah, and in fact, I mentioned this at the beginning, and I hope I'm not ruining your trivia, Melanie, but they first pitched this to Universal, and Universal didn't want to do it. So TriStar ended up doing it.
I have that.
And so the monsters are changed ever so slightly to not be Universal monsters. Like, Dracula doesn't have a widow's peak. That's how they got around that.
Wow.
Frankenstein, the bolts are in his head and not in his neck. That's how they got around that. And so that's why the rights to this movie are so wrapped up, and why there's never been a remake or anything else done, because they basically skirted the line with Universal at a time when Universal was not as, you know, big as they are now. So you can't really get away with the same type of stuff now that you could then. So that everybody is like in contention with who owns what in this movie.
Right. Yeah. So maybe we should just do a mic drop before the trivia and say that the next Monster Squad should have Steamboat Willie in it. Just throwing it out there. I mean, you know, not going to worry about it too much.
And I have that, like, at first the crew was told that they could recreate the actual Universal monsters. And they were so excited about it. They're like, oh my God, how amazing is this that we actually get to recreate this? But then they were, like, literally told in the middle of making them that, no, you can't use it. That's when they had to kind of just tweak everything because they didn't have the permission, the license to use those exact images. They could call it Dracula. They can say the Frankenstein's monster, but they had, like he said, they had to change just little slight things so that they didn't look exactly like them so they wouldn't get in trouble.
Yeah, and it's hilarious that they could just be like, you know what, let's take away the widow's peak and we'll be fine.
Move the bolt from here to there.
It's groundskeeper Willie. He got the shin.
Yeah.
Hey, you want to get sued?
All right.
So one other thing that I remember from the trivia as well, and if I'm taking this, I apologize, but I imagine you have tons.
I don't have that much. I got a lot of notes, actually. But
I like the fact that whoever played Frankenstein was basically remaining in character. So the guy who played Rudy was like, hey, whatever your name is, like the actor, he's like, nice to meet you, man. He's like, and he's like, okay, and I see what's happening.
Do you have it in your trivia, Melanie, who actually auditioned for Frankenstein and didn't get it?
I probably do because I have a shit ton of notes and the thing. I know Liam Neeson.
Yes.
Is that what you were going to say?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, it says he was paid for a bit part that was never shot. And then
he originally was trying to be Frankenstein because he's so tall, he didn't get the part.
Isn't that crazy though? But he was still paid for it.
Well, yeah, because once you're under some sort of a contract,
they gotta pay you.
Yeah, like Sylvester Stallone or somebody got paid for Beverly Hills Cop, like or something like that.
Pay for play
and not wasn't in it, but like because they were like promise to do it at one point or something. It's like they get paid. So
that's funny.
You want to do with TMI? You think we're good? Pretty much.
Yep.
Okay.
All right. Here we go.
Start the theme. I'm going to the men's room.
I said I didn't want to start the trivia right now. I just wanted to go through my notes really quick. I just wanted to mention the Stephen King Rules T-shirt that he had on, and he's kept that actually, which is funny. And then I always loved the cast and the crew. I always loved the parents. The way they were, and I loved that movie was right next to a drive-in theater that they could go up on the roof and watch the movies, which I always thought was cool. Oh, I loved it when the dad doesn't even bother to look in the closet when he was like, look at that big, scary
monster. Oh, that was a great moment, yeah.
Ooh, yeah. And he's just standing there, and then he goes, look, you're not going to sleep with your mother and me tonight, so you can just forget it. And if you keep this up, you're not going to look at those monster magazines anymore either. It's like, he's like, you understand, or whatever. So I thought that was cute.
That's awesome.
And then I loved the scenery in the beginning, how they had to set up like the old Frankenstein with the little girl playing by the lake, you know. Oh, I also made a note. I don't know if you guys noticed that literally Pepsi must have sponsored this or something because every freaking person in this thing is drinking Pepsi. Clear as day.
With it up like this.
Yeah. Everybody. I was like, okay, Pepsi must have sponsored this. And then when you guys mentioned the whole, like, you know, don't be chicken shit. And then it was funny because Sean goes, does Mom know about him? Which I thought was kind of cute. Or when Frankenstein gets shown the mask and he looks at it and he throws it down and he goes, scary. And then she goes, I taught him how to talk. And he goes, bogus. Give me a break.
I thought that was funny.
And it is an emotional moment.
Yes.
When he's flying away and she throws, you know, doesn't she throw it?
Yeah,
the doll. Yep. She's like, no, Frankenstein. He's like, bye. You know, it was cute. No, but it was so sweet. Yeah. Like, it's hard not to like feel something. You don't have to cry, but necessarily, but like at least, you know, it gives a nice vibe.
Yeah. And then I noticed when I was looking at this, that the actor that played the mummy, I was like, holy crap, this guy is so tiny. Like, who did they get to play this? Because he's so small. So I looked him up and it says director David Fincher's most, that's what he's the director, David Fincher's most physically horrifying thing that he played in. He was in Seven, the movie Seven. And
really?
So the mummy was in Seven because he's such a tiny guy. So the guy in Seven, if you guys have seen that, when
been a while.
Well, the guy that he was like starving to death that he had laying in the bed.
Oh, yes.
With all the like air fresheners everywhere.
Yep.
Yeah.
Because he's so tiny. That's the guy who played the mummy.
He's Michael Reed McKay. He's 5'5".
Okay, that's what I have. And the only way that, so yeah, director Fincher is, I don't know why. They're talking about the seven, but Michael Reed McKay, 5'5". It says often hired for a slight appearance. He only weighed 96 pounds when he made this.
Wow.
Yeah, it says now these days he's a whopping 108 pounds. I'm like, oh my God. Wow.
And he's a New England boy, New London, Connecticut.
Is he?
All right.
And then I think he was also in Insidious, Sleepwalkers, Batman, and Ace Ventura, and then X2. And then the Gilman is a special effects artist, and he started doing special effects, and he had kind of asked if he could get into the Gilman suit. He said that he was in Death Becomes Her, Jurassic Park, Godzilla, Alien versus Predator, amongst many other things. But so when he was in that Gilman suit, they had to like basically glue him in there. And he was like, he could barely see. And he was in that suit for, I think they said like, and I might have written this down somewhere else, like 10 hours or 12 hours a day or something. And he kind of was getting claustrophobic, but he was glad that he just kept, that he kept on through. And now, even though he's a special effects artist, he likes to actually become the monsters more.
That's fun.
And then Frankenstein was played by Tom Noonan, who was the bad guy in The Last Action Hero, and he's been in a ton of stuff. And then I talked to you about the documentary, which you guys have to see. I forgot. I might have been on Tubi, The Wolfman's Got Nards.
I've never actually seen that.
It's good. It's cute.
Is this like... I had heard about something that they were doing. Is this where, like, they're doing a screening at this theater and, like, hundreds of people show up and the actors are there? Is that...
That's, like, a piece in there, yeah. It's basically a documentary about the movie, and it has all the directors and actors and, like, things that I was kind of telling you, and then, like, it shows stuff like that because they kind of travel around because it's become so big. And I don't know if you guys noticed that my mom noticed that the wife has packed her bags in the background. So when the husband actually comes back... She's about ready to leave. She's about ready to walk out that door any second. She's got her bags packed in the background, and she's about ready to walk out the door.
And another connection, guys, is that mom is the mom in Goonies.
Yeah.
Yes.
And
she's
also
in Lethal Weapon.
She's in Lethal Weapon. She's the newscaster in Die Hard.
Yes.
Shane Black.
Yeah,
and she passed away at 62 years old.
Oh wow!
Yeah, so she was in 2015. So it's too bad. I liked her. She had some good stuff, like good roles.
I liked her too.
Here's some trivia. I looked up the singer for the songs, like the montage and the rap thing. Like I don't think he rapped. I'm not sure, but I know he wrote it.
Dracula, Michael, the Wolfman too. That one.
Right. It's Michael Cimbello. That did the songs. Michael Cimbello, who did the song Maniac from Flashdance.
Oh, yeah.
All right.
Yeah, he did those two.
That's a big leap.
Yeah.
Let's get the guy who did Maniac to
We're bound to spend gold twice. Or lightning, whatever.
I also like the scene where the vampires were walking down the street. I thought that was just a good scene. The girl vampires.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Oh, yeah.
And then there's also a cute cartoon that's all bunnies. That is basically explaining the entire Monster Squad movie really fast.
I've seen those.
Bunnies.
Yeah, I've seen those. They do Titanic. Yeah. They do
Jaws.
The actor who played Dracula wanted his character to be more of like a sociopath and not like a beastie kind of a character.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah. And then I know that the director really is bittersweet for him because he basically said that like, you know, you make a movie and you put your entire heart and soul into it. Nobody even bothers to notice for 20 years.
Yeah.
So he's, you know.
But that's the crazy thing is that they did notice. They just noticed on HBO. All of us grew up with HBO. So we didn't fall in love with it 20 years later. We fell in love with it back then. We just, there wasn't any internet. We couldn't discuss it in any way.
True.
Yeah. And it was very hard to get. And it was really hard for the DVDs to come out, actually, too. I think they had found one. I think they said something like, I could be totally wrong, but it was like one copy or something that somebody had bought in a different country or something. And that's how they ended up having to finally be able to make DVDs from it or something.
That's how one of my, the prize of my collection, one of my piece of things that I own that I'm more proud of than anything is a screening copy of The Worst Witch, the HBO show that Fairuza Balk was in. Because, again, I loved all things Halloween. And because I worked at the video store, it was never released on like a standard video. But we got some screener when they were trying to get it a second wind into it. And so the manager was like, hey, you want this? I was like, yes.
Wow.
That's awesome.
That's awesome.
It's time for TMI with Melanie.
Listen to this. I am in the bathroom right before the movie starts.
Uh-huh.
And I'm in the stall and there's no toilet paper.
Yeah. And mine are at home in a display case above my bed.
Yeah. TMI. TMI, my friends.
TMI? Too much information. Say don't go there, but that's lame.
Now, here's Melanie with your timeless movie info.
All right, Melanie. Blow us away with this monster madness.
Well, we talked about a couple of things. I can cross some stuff out. But the budget was $14 million. It grossed $3.8, which was horrible.
Not great.
It's horrible. The scene where Dracula lifts Phoebe up and she screams, that was done in one take. Duncan Rager wouldn't wear his red contacts or fangs around the five-year-old Ashley Bank because it scared her too much. So for the scene, the director, Fred Decker, just told Ashley to scream once the platform had raised her up, and she said, well, when? And he goes, oh, you'll know. So
nice.
When he opened his eyes and his eyes were all red, and then he like hissed at her kind of and yelled at her, she was literally terrified.
That's
and
like when they dropped Hans Gruber without telling him that he was going to be falling at the end.
Yeah. So anyway, they were saying that like that's her real genuine screams. And then in 2006, Wizard Magazine made the list of 100 greatest villains of all time. Dracula was ranked number 30 on the list, but surprisingly, it was only for Duncan Rager's performance in this film. His performance was chosen over all other versions of characters of Dracula, and it's still considered to be one of the most and absolute best interpretations of the character. Near the start of the movie, the plane where Dracula first appears has the word Browning written on the side of it.
Yep. Todd
which
Browning.
Was, yep, a nod to Todd, yep, Dracula 1931. According to director Fred Decker, Shane Black's first draft of the screenplay was so huge that the opening of the film featured Van Helsing accompanied by Zeppelins and hundreds of men on horseback storming Dracula's castle. Decker stated that this sequence would have cost more than the final budget of the film. Good thing they didn't do that since they didn't make that much.
Yeah. Can I just add about the budget? So,
yeah.
Jay, you actually saw it in the theater, so you were some of that money that it actually made back. There you go.
Yeah.
Was that at Triborough Cinemas?
Huh? No, probably the Lincoln Mall in Rhode Island.
Okay, all right.
Oh, my God, Lincoln Mall.
Yeah, that Lincoln Mall. Yeah, right. General Cinema.
All right, sorry.
No, you're good. In one scene, they show a map where Dracula's hiding out, but on the other side of the map, it says Cheney College. In the location, which is a homage to actor Lon Chaney Jr., who played Lawrence or Larry in Talbert's and Universal's The Wolfman. Seth Green screen tested for a role and even read with Andre Gower, who was cast as Sean. The two have become good friends. He was also on the documentary. One of the technical improvements devised for the Monster Squad, there was a lot of stuff, and I kind of didn't get into it much because there was a lot. But I guess apparently there was cable controllers that could be operated by fewer puppeteers. For instance, like in a skeleton, like say if they were doing a skeleton hand, they wanted to make it move. It would have taken like 10 puppeteers just to get the fingers to move. And they got it down to one. So they did a lot of stuff in the making of this movie that was not really done before. Right. And then I thought this was weird because did you guys see the armadillos and the possums in the beginning of this movie?
Yes.
I thought that was so weird. So I looked that up, and apparently it was because if you look at the Dracula 1931, they have armadillos and possums in the background when Count Dracula opens up his coffin and stuff like that was played by Bela Lugosi. So
really?
That was a homage too, yeah.
Not a lot of armadillos in Transylvania, I don't think.
No, I wouldn't think so.
Just throwing it out there.
That's why I thought it was so weird.
A little odd. I thought they were just supposed to be wet rats. And I'm like, no, that's an armadillo.
It's an armadillo.
All right.
And then the lady's eating a possum later on.
Mm-hmm. I forgot.
It's just so weird to me. Like, yeah. That's it.
Cool.
It's time now for Final Judgment. Are you ready to rubber stamp this bitch? Here's the Final Judgment.
All right. It's time for Final Judgment. We talk about fact, not opinion. Or opinion, not fact, you decide.
Chris, you're the one that loves it the most.
So it's not about whether or not I like it. It's about whether or not it holds up. I did watch it. Didn't like it as much as I thought I was going to like it because I thought I was really looking forward to it. It's one of those movies that is a cult status. I'm like, oh, I'm going to give it a shot. I didn't like it that much because I thought the tone was really confusing. I didn't know where to come with it. And I didn't have that childhood attachment to it.
Right.
So because of that, it was hard to watch. It's not bad. I just wasn't digging it. That's all. I mean, I don't know that I would recommend it to someone my age, but that's just me. It's not bad. I can see why it's a cult movie. Cult movies are either get it or you don't. And I wasn't really digging on it as much as I had hoped. What was the last movie that was? I forgot what else. What was the last thing we did?
Real Genius or
Ghostbusters
2.
Ghostbusters 2. Ghostbusters 2 is not bad. I just don't like it. There's a lot wrong with it.
The Scolari brothers.
Yeah. I never kind of got my teeth into it, so therefore it doesn't resonate. So does it hold up? No, not at all. Just for the slurs and such, just for the tone is weird. I think they would have kind of fixed the tone, figure out who this movie is for. They would have done a little more research on that rather than just kind of greenlight it. So, no, it doesn't hold up. I don't think it holds up. So no. That's it. So who we got next? Let's go Jason.
Well, I have to say that for whatever reason, the tone worked for me. I don't know if I was their desired audience, but again, opposite of you, Chris, is that I did have that childhood attachment to it.
Yeah.
And so for me, it's like watching A Christmas Story at the holidays. I watch a Monster Squad at Halloween. Christmas Story was a box office failure. This too was. Apparently, that's my vibe, box office failures. I don't think it does hold up today. I think this wouldn't be made today. I think if it would be made today, it would have a more direct tone one way or the other. But for whatever reason, it found its little niche in my heart. And I'm going to continue to watch it probably every year.
Jason, I think that if you could get past some of the things that wouldn't fly today, some of the language and some of the other stuff, I would rather watch this than Hocus Pocus every Halloween. 1,000%. I don't know why people watch that movie every Halloween.
Hocus Pocus ain't my thing, it was a little late for me, so I never had an attachment to it. But I have a neighbor who has the same attachment to that movie that I have to Monster Squad. So so much of it, I think, is built in. How we build these things into our lives.
Sure.
Yes,
sure.
I think so too.
Agreed. All right, Melanie, so what's your deal?
So I agree with some of the slurs, especially, I mean, them calling the fat kid fat.
And I know you're... She
agrees with the slurs.
She agrees with the slurs, folks.
I agree. Yeah. They're all gay slurs. Yeah. I'm just kidding.
Yes, so all of those, obviously, that would never hold up. But... in a way, and it's not just because of the cult status, but when you have people that grew up with it, that loved it like me, then you're going to show it to the next generation of your kids. And then those people are going to show it to the next generation of those kids. So it's hard to say that something is not standing out, because even when you watch the documentary, if you watch it, there are little tiny kids on there that look like they're literally like 5, and they're like, Monster Squad, you know, and then you've got 10-year-olds on there and teenagers on there saying how much they love it. And like, then you've got people that are in their 20s that like it. And then you have people that are like in their 50s that like it because they got brought up with it. So I think it depends. Like, it needs to kind of go around with the people who loved it and pass it on to that generation, pass it on to their generation, pass it on. So it is holding up in a way, because it's more popular now than it ever was when it ever came out. But so I think it does hold up because of that. And I do think it's a good movie, and I think it's super cute and funny. And then, you know, if you start bringing it up and having your kids watch it when they're little, then they would appreciate it and love it, and it would carry on. They would have to, if somebody was to make it right now, brand new, they would have to obviously change a lot of things. So I think the original movie does hold up with people that love it and can continue to show it to their, you know, next generations. So I think it holds up for that. But I think if it was to be remade, it would come out now, it wouldn't. It would have to be different. So
it definitely has a skeleton of a good remake. Let's put it.
Yeah, somebody could somebody could really have fun with this.
Yeah.
And do a great job, I think.
Yep. Jay?
So I'm gonna go 50-50 because I agree with both sides on that. I agree with Melanie
that the right people, like I'm sure I could easily show my kids or at least one of my kids this and they'd be okay. And I'd be like, listen, those are terrible words. Don't use them. The rest of this is okay. You know what I mean? Like, you know, the rest of it's still a good. Now, Chris, I mean, obviously those words are terrible. Like, you know, like the gay slurs, but I'm talking about like, you know, any other swearing is probably cool to a younger kid, just like Ghostbusters 1 was for you in that age bracket. Yeah. Like, that type of thing. So, like, anybody, like, you know, like, Jason was 10 when he watched it and probably like, I'm watching something kind of edgy, you know, like ahead of me, you know. But so I think I think following.
Go ahead. Can I on that? And again, I obviously have a mouth like a pirate. But I think back in the day, to me, edgy was when I saw grown people saying hell, shit, and damn. But to me, a young person, even chicken shit is funny. To me, once you go to asshole, like, to me, that almost crosses a weird boundary.
Yeah. I mean, even like television censors, you can say ass, but you can't add the hole to it. So it's
Hey, it's like you know, the electric company, you know, with the two faces. Ass. No, I can't say it. We're on network TV. Yeah. Ass. No, I can't say it. right. But no, I think, like I said, you know, this, I really feel there's so much of it that does, because it was clean looking. It looked, you know, it looked good still. Yeah. And the vibe is fun. I still feel that, that fun vibe. So I really still enjoyed myself. So like I wasn't bored. And you know, obviously with this day and age audience, everything's weird. Like, you know, like, I mean, meaning you can't, I don't think you could take a kid maybe. I don't think a kid would come across it, like a 13, 14-year-old kid would come across it and stay maybe by themselves without somebody holding their hand and saying, sit down and watch it.
Although the physical effects, like the makeup effects, still hold up. I think if you showed somebody just a still of the monsters and you would say, what do you think? These look pretty cool. They'd say, yeah, these look pretty cool. I mean, obviously the special effects aren't very special anymore, but... But, I mean, the monster makeup is
amazing. They don't need to look super good because the original monsters don't look super intricate.
Mm-hmm. True. That's true.
It's just so you can get away with that, and it's fine.
Yep.
It doesn't need to look updated because they're not supposed to look updated. Mm-hmm. They're supposed to look old and
comedy.
Dusty.
You're true, old and And I think because it's a comedy and there's so many cute little phrases and stuff in it, I think that it grabs anybody and that you're watching. You're just like, you just, you know, kind of laugh. But, you know, my mom still likes it. And she started watching it when she was an adult. I still like it. And then when we were watching it, my daughter comes running downstairs. She's going to be 20. And she comes running downstairs. She's getting stuff to really leave. And she goes, oh, what are you watching? Oh, Monster Squad. I love this movie. You know, so so they still like it. So like I said, I know when she has kids one day, she's going to be like, oh, you know, Mom, can I borrow your Monster Squad? I want to show my kids. You know what I mean? Like, that generation will like it. I think it's cute. But yeah, as we see today, certain things, even my daughter would see, like, certain things that were talking about the slurs, she would never. She'd be like, you cannot say these things now.
Well, but, and I think there's so many. I mean, if you take any movie out of this time period and place it into now, there's probably something in every one of those movies that would not fly today. And so I think this is just guilty of the era in which it existed, and people saying,
like, we were watching Mannequin too. Mannequin, remember, was like really bad, like that.
Mm-hmm. Well, that was our show, everybody. I'd like to thank Jason Burns for being here. Like, once again, if you can just remind everybody how to find you.
You can find me at thewhataboutpodcast.com or jason-m-burns.com. And funny enough, I actually released a book many years ago called The Sleepy Truth, which was a bit of my homage to Monster Squad. It's about a group of kids who live in a small town and do their own weekly world news about all the weird happenings that happen in their town. So
that's awesome.
That's so cool. I also like to thank Steve LaVoy for our vocal imaging and Draco and the Malfoys for our theme music. Please help us grow by liking this video, subscribing to our channel, and be sure to hit the bell icon to get notified whenever we release a new video. And be sure to tell your friends about us. It's really hard to promote. Well, my name is Jay Fortier, and on behalf of Melanie and Chris, I'd like to thank you again for joining us here on the Film Crickets. Until next time, movies may not age like fine wine, but we drink it anyway. Bye.
chirping about movies.